Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Fill her up!
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the fuck up.
This is Believe You Me on the Gas Digital Network.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back with another episode of the Believe You Me podcast, and we have a fantastic show planned for you today. Lots of things to talk about, non-MMA stories, lots going on in the world of mixed martial arts. Special guest, Sugar Sean O'Malley's dropping by, telling us what he's up to and what he's been doing and when he's going to be fighting again and just rolling around in the back of a limousine looking like the pimp that he is. And of course, we have Harrington and Brian, as always. But we also have special guest co-host today, the real Jesse on Fire, the YouTube sensation, coming live from Austin, Texas. What's up, Jesse? How are you, buddy?
What's up, Michael Bisping? That is the first time anyone's called me a sensation of any kind, and I like how it sounds.
Well, don't get used to it, okay? That's the first and only one you're going to get. For people who may not be familiar with Jesse, Jesse runs a sensational YouTube channel, so make sure you check that out, subscribe and all that good stuff. And I've been watching your videos for a while, Jesse, and then obviously I do my own YouTube channel now, and the amount of people that were hitting me up saying, you've got to get Jesse on as a co-host. You've got to get him on. So I have succumbed to public pressure. Jesse, welcome to Believe You Me, but I do apologize for Harrington in advance.
Thank you very much, sir. I think they got the idea because I took a video of you and me talking through a super chat, and then I put it at the beginning of a video. And so they're like, oh, let's go get this motherfucker.
Yeah. Well, there you go. You're here. You're a massive fan of the UFC as well. You were saying you haven't missed a pay-per-view from the very, very early days. So, and I like your YouTube channel, and you seem like you got a similar sense of humor to me. You're coming to us live from Austin, Texas, right?
Correct.
What is it about, because everybody seems to be leaving California and going down to Austin, Texas. Is this the haven from taxes what is the attraction about Austin?
It's that it's like, well, first of all, you get to leave California for any number of many reasons. And then if you're like, well, so, you know, if your goal is to leave California, you got to pick somewhere. And so you're like, I don't know, where do people move? And it's like, well, Rogan moved to Austin. That seems like people might move there. And then you're like, people moving to Florida. But for us, there's a lot of This just felt like the right spot.
Yeah, but people, I live in California and I hate the taxes because I just got my tax bill on New Year's fucking Eve of all days. It went out my account. My accountant just took it out and I spent most of New Year's Eve in bed almost crying, thinking, what is the point in working so fucking hard? What is the point? But still, the weather is fantastic here. Aren't you surrounded by fucking tornadoes and hurricanes and all kinds of shit down there? Come on, man.
No, it's perfect. I will say, though, Orange County is the one part of California where you get off the plane and you're like, okay, I fucking get it. Like, I get it why people want to live here. Orange County, you're instantaneously in the promised paradise that is California. That's really the only place, though, in the whole state that's that way.
No, I don't know about that. Some of the people around here, I want to slap. I tell you, I do want to slap some of the people. But still, anyway, moving on. Harrington, Brian, show yourselves. How are you, people? So Harrington, as always, has compiled notes for us. And we stick our oar in. We guide the ship a little bit. But Harrington, as always, say hello to Jesse. Jesse, Harrington, Harrington, Jesse.
Hi, Jesse. How you doing, man?
Excellent. Yourself?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I am excited to be here. I'm happy that we have UFC returning in just 10 days now. It feels like it's been quite some time. But I'm hyped with some of the stories we've had. It's been a pretty action-packed week.
No, it really has. It really has. But still, what is the first non-MMA MMA topic? Because some of them, and by the way, for people that don't know, and Jesse joined just as we were talking about this, Harrington's suggestion was that we talk about pedophilia. Okay. Jesse, did you hear that?
I definitely heard that.
Okay, it wasn't explicit pedophilia. It was, you know, what would you guys do in a situation as fathers of daughters? And I'm always intrigued by that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well,
you
that's
have three daughters,
topic.
Right, Jesse?
What's that? I have three daughters, yeah.
Yeah, and I have one. But and we did see the video, but we don't. We think that YouTube will pull us down if we show it. But the video was a guy at a bar leaning over a girl and, like, you know, just, I don't know, being a bit of a creep. And then a guy was filming, obviously saw what we were about to see. Fuck it, just play the video. I'm standing here butchering it terribly. Just fuck it. We're not on YouTube anymore. Let's go. Let's play the video.
I don't think they'll have a problem with this.
So here we go. So it's a busy bar area. Obviously, people are having drinks, right? And there's a guy with his cell phone out. So he's approaching because he can see. And if you're watching this on YouTube, the guy in the distance with the white shirt on, and he's got his arms around the girl. And as he gets closer, there it is. Well done, Brian. He turns around. Look at that girl. She's about 15. She's an absolute baby. Yeah, that was Harrington's suggestion. I mean, of course, we don't like this. Well, nobody likes that.
He knew instantly, too. Like, the second that he saw someone was filming, he was all, oh, hey, what's it like? If he's got his arm around a 22-year-old, why are you jumping off her like that? You know
yeah,
what I
mean? So instantly, this is where it gets weird, right? They asked him how old she was, and he starts to say 18, and then he goes to 16 immediately. And they ask him how old he is. He says he's 32, and they question him why he's touching her in that manner, and he starts trying to say that she's his daughter to get out of that situation. And
so he knows.
Yeah, so I'm just wondering, like, how, like, that does strike me as something, like, how would you handle that? Because I never know what to do in a situation like that in public, and it's like, I don't know, I feel like being a parent you is inherent to you, no?
Can you get away with murder?
Well, exactly, exactly.
It was in Chicago, Illinois.
In Texas, of this dude who walked up on some, like, field hand that was working at his place, and he caught him with his kid, and he beat the guy to... The guy looked like someone ran him over with an 18-wheeler afterwards and almost killed him. And they when they found out what happened, they were just like, "Oh, you're good. That's fine. That's acceptable."
Yeah, I mean, of course, how would I handle it? I wouldn't be happy about it. I don't think I'd beat the guy within an inch of his life, as Jesse's talking about there. But yeah, I mean, the guy's a creep. I mean, what more do you want me to say? Simple as that. I get it a lot. I see there's lewd comments about my daughter Ellie all the time. And there's a lot of dickheads out there. And I just ignore them all the time. And people are just trying to goad me into responding. That's what they want. Of course, it's different on social media to real life. Do you know what I mean? And I don't give them what they want. And my daughter just blocks them and gets rid of them. Unfortunately, there's a bunch of sad motherfuckers out there that want to... I don't know. Just try and start shit online, but in person, yeah. Come on, man. It's disgusting. It's absolutely fucking disgusting. She's 18.
Mm.
18. Yeah. I put a picture on her recently, and she did some headshots because, you know, she's doing some stuff. And
I remember that.
I was proud of her, and she had a top on. But people was like, "Why are you posting naked pictures of your daughter?" And I'm like, "Okay, fair enough. From the picture, I could see it looked like she wasn't naked. She was fully dressed, but it was a headshot, and she had on like a top." And people were like, "Why are you posting naked pictures of your daughter?" I'm like, "I'm not posting naked pictures of my daughter. I'm proud of her. You know what I mean? That's my daughter, my only daughter. How old are your kids, Jesse?
Mine are 9, 6, and 4.
Oh, they're babies then. Yeah."
Yeah, but they're all going to grow up to look like their mom. So I've got a...
You got your work cut out for you.
There's a future state that is going to be, a lot of dickheads for sure.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Three daughters. Good luck with that one. Because in my house, when my son, Callum, left and went to college, my youngest son is basically just, he's the biggest mummy's boy you've ever met. Mm. So there's my wife, there's my daughter, and then there's Lucas, who's just a mummy's boy. So I am outnumbered. The heating is always on. It's always boiling hot. We have to do what they want. We have to watch what they want. So I'm just warning you, Jesse, your life's going to get pretty miserable when the girls get older.
Yeah. How much different is it parenting boys versus girls for you?
I don't know. My daughter was harder.
I know that teenage girls. Oh my God. I'm not equipped for that. Do you know what I mean? Teenage boy, I can handle that. And Callum was great anyway. He was the easiest kid ever to deal with. But Ellie was a little different. Anyway, Harrington, enough of the pedophilia talk. It was a terrible idea for a thing. Do we have, what else do we have? Cause we had some hilarious stories in there and you just go down the dark side straight away.
Well, I mean, I'm sorry. I just, you know, I feel like this is instructional more than anything for me. I want to know how to live a good life. So I'm asking you guys for guidance because that one did rock me to my core today.
But yeah, if you want guidance for living a good life, don't hit on fucking 15-year-old girls when you're 32. Not excellent if you don't policy. Want to be hospitalized. There's a good piece of advice for you, Harrington.
Yeah.
All right, fair enough. All right, so apparently there's a story out here now. Twin Falls, Idaho schools are said to allow students to identify as animals. So, you know, we have kids who are dressing up here. They, you know, if you know, like the cosplay lifestyle, they're dressing as furries and they want to live their life as animals. And rather than being forced to seek counseling, the school's making provisions for them.
But the story when I sent it through that I saw was that one girl, I think the parents are suing the school because they won't allow a litter box in school for her to piss in. Okay. This is a real thing. And then on the video, there's little girls going, meow, meow. Now she's pretending to be a girl. Jesse, what is your take on this?
I can tell you right now that anybody who watches both my channels they're laughing. Cause I have another channel dedicated to stuff like this, which is just like, do the parents think they're doing the kid a favor with this? Like I look at parenting, like your job is setting the kid up to be a functional, strong, confident adult that can take care of themselves and potentially a family when they're older. And that's it. It's relatively straightforward. It's not simple. How on earth is convincing your kid that it's okay to pretend to be a cat going to help them function in real life when they're older? There's no one's going to convince me that that's anything other than like a mental illness.
Because I hate to break it to you. You're not a fucking cat. Yeah, do you know what I mean? Hey, listen, you know, like I'm pretty progressive. You know, if somebody wants to, you know, if they're a male and they want to identify as a female, good for you. God bless you. Sure. If you're a male and you want to identify as a female or vice versa, whatever, I couldn't care less. As long as you're a good person, you're not harming anyone. Good for you. God bless you. Go for it. But I draw the line at a fucking cat. Do you know what I mean? Or any kind of animal or non-human species. I say no, because you're not.
Yep.
Can we just start hitting kids again?
Dude.
Well, hey, listen, maybe not a bad idea. Because in my house, and this is how far I am with this, like my son Lucas, when he has his cereal in the morning, and my wife, and I've spoken to my wife at length about this, I'm not happy about it. She allows him to eat his cereal with a fork. Okay. And that, to me, never mind identifying as a cat, just him eating his cereal with a fork really gets on my fucking nerves. I'm like, no, we're raising him to be a weirdo. You eat cereal with a spoon. And they're like, no, he doesn't like the milk. He just wants the actual. And I'm like, I don't give a fuck. Well, then you drain a bit of the milk off with the spoon at the side of the bowl. You don't eat it with the fork. And she's like, Michael, you really need to choose your battles in life. I'm like, no, I will fucking die on this hill. He's eating cereal with the spoon going forward.
So he likes damp cereal, but doesn't want the milk.
Yes, correct.
At least there's like a functional reason he wants to do it.
But we're raising a weirdo. When he gets out into the big wide world and he goes on a camp or something and he's eating his cereal with a fork, he's going to get mocked, let alone this motherfucker identifying as a cat. I mean, what is going on in the world?
Lunacy. I mean, my wife was telling me that there are schools that are actually doing the litter box thing. Like that's like the reason they're asking for it is because that's like a thing that's happening.
Are you serious?
Yeah. That's what my wife was telling me.
Wow. See, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. No wonder this generation's so fucked up. You know what I mean? I mean, listen, I mean, that is, I would assume, mental illness, all jokes aside, that would have to be some form of mental illness. But I guess in this modern society that everyone has to be respected, which I'm all for. I'm all for that, but it's like, come on, mate. You're not a cat. You're not a feline of any species. You know,
the difference between if someone's born male, they want to be female, and you just refer to them as anything that they want. You know, do you want to be a girl? I'll call you a girl. That's just normal. But like, there's there's something completely different about, I want to bring a litter box in, and it's like, just relax, man. Like, stop trying to push it to the absolute end of the earth. It seems like they do it just to see what they can get away with, almost like with like this kind of thing.
That's what I was just going to say. It's like, let's just see how far we can push this. Let's just see how tolerant these people are. Identifying as fucking cats. Oh my God, it's crazy. Anyway, we got tons of MMA stuff to talk about. So we'll shift on from that. And we got Sean O'Malley joining us shortly as well. In fact, we'll go to Sean O'Malley now. Sugar Sean O'Malley of The Sugar Show joined us earlier. We'll speak to him real quick, and then we're going to break down all the biggest stories in mixed martial arts.
What up, boys?
How are you, my friend? Thanks for joining us. I really appreciate you taking the time, mate.
Yeah, of course, man. Anytime you ask, I'll show up.
Come on. Where are you coming to us live from? It looks like you're in the back of a taxi or somewhere. I don't know. Where are you? In Arizona?
I'm glad you asked, Mike. I'm in my limo.
Get the fuck out of town. You have changed, Sean.
No. I had to come. I'm actually just at home, but I am in my limo because I had to buy I found on Craigslist a 2000 Lincoln limo, and I'm flying down a bunch of my friends from Twitch and at the end of this month. So I'm like, how are we all going to drive around in my fucking little car? So I had to get a limo, and I'm fucking bored at home. So I thought, you know what? I'll fucking come sit in it.
Hey, why the fuck not? So is it the full stretch?
I'm trying to figure out how to flip the camera around, but I don't know if I can. That's not it.
Oh, fuck. That's not it for sure.
It's just like a good, it's a good size. I mean, we could fit.
Oh, look at that. There we go.
12 people in here.
That's nice. So the Twitch, how many subscribers you got on there? Because I don't do Twitch. That's like one of the only things. I mean, I don't really play video games. I just suck. Do you know what I mean? So I know my limitations.
The last like 3 weeks, I haven't been able to game because I fractured my thumb. So I've just been chatting. I go live and I fucking do this for 2 hours, just talk. I have like 2,000 subscribers right now on Twitch, and it's, you know, it fluctuates every month. But yeah, Twitch is something I've been doing for 4 years. So I've been grinding on Twitch, growing the channel, and it's been fun.
Nice. Well, between that, the YouTube, the podcast, and of course, being one of the biggest fucking stars in the UFC right now, I'm assuming you're a busy man.
Very busy. It's nice though. You know, it's a good stress. It's a good busy. Definitely can't complain.
Yeah, no, that's it. You know what I mean? Because as a fighter, I mean, you're being smart. You're opening the doors now. That's what I try to do. But you're way ahead of it. Because, I mean, how long do you want to do this for? I mean, obviously, you've still got a lot of things to accomplish in your career and what a career it's been so far. But I'm assuming you don't want to do it forever. And all the stuff that you're doing now, extracurricular activities, is only going to, you know, support a great life after fighting.
Yeah, I think for me, when it's all said and done and I'm going to compete for the last time, it's going to be tough, or at least compete in the octagon. I'm sure I'll find ways. You know, I'll probably compete in jiu-jitsu, you know, until I'm way older. But competing in the octagon for the last time will be very tough. You know, I want to do it as long as I can. So, you know, I'm thinking I could push it 35, 36, 37, around there. Super fights like, you know, you versus Silva and big fights like that. I think I want to, you know, build my profile that high to where I can do those big, crazy fights. You know, you see Mayweather doing wild exhibitions and stuff right now. That's going to be me. I'm going to enjoy doing that stuff. But for right now, I think, you know, the last 2 years, I've gotten 3 fights in each year. I think that's kind of a good pace right now. I'm thinking next year or this year, 2022, I really wanted to get 3 fights in. But I don't want to force anything. So, you know, I think this year might only be allow for 2, just kind of considering where my thumb's at right now, which is, it's not bad. I get the cast off next week, but I don't want to force any training camps or anything. So, but as far as building everything outside the UFC, I think it's going to come down to everything I'm building outside the UFC is going to help with negotiations and kind of just where my career goes from there.
Well, let's just go back to that last fight that you had, Sean. I think that was one of your career best. Of course, first round stoppage, the hands were fucking lightning, my friend. And of course, now, what is the actual ranking? Forgive my ignorance there. Are you in the top 15 now? I know, right?
Yeah, no, the rankings are weird. I was ranked 13, and then the other day I got a text and like, "Hey, you're ranked 12 now." I'm like, "I fucking haven't done anything. I don't know why am I ranked 12." So yeah, the rankings are weird, but yeah, officially I guess we're ranked in the top 15.
Yeah, no. That was a, as I say, tremendous performance, and you just seem to be getting better and better. It's a cliched question, but is there anyone that you're looking at next? Is there any? I mean, and by the way, I'm a fan of the way that you've done this. You know what I mean? Because a lot of people, they want to go, of course, for the biggest names possible and all the rest of it. But you want to build and you want to get experience and you want to grow your star and your brand and your skills as you're doing this. So I think the way you're doing it is perfect, and a lot of younger fighters should pay attention. But is there anybody in mind that you would like to, you know, take next?
Thanks. I appreciate the compliments. But yeah, I think for next, it's nice not knowing of a specific name or a specific date. When I knew I was fighting Paiva, it was like 10, 11 weeks out. And like, I told myself, I'm not going to get into fight camp mode until about 6 weeks out. I don't want to mentally burn out because I've done that before. I've known I've had a fight too long, and I've just kind of overtrained in a sense. So it's nice right now not having a date, specific date or an opponent in mind. But if I had to narrow it down to who's next, like there's a couple options. I think the Adrian Yanez, people really like that fight. That's an exciting matchup. Rob Bont, I know he's ranked a little bit higher. I think Rob has acknowledged, he's like, that's a big fight. I don't really necessarily care if he's ranked out of the top 10 or whatever. That's a big fight. You beat me. Like when Cheeto beat me, he fought Jose Aldo after that. It's like, you beat me. That means something. That's a big, big fight. You're going to get a big fight after that. So when Dominic Cruz comes out and says he doesn't want to fight me, he wants to fight up, beating me could get some of those guys a title shot realistically. So I think Rob Bond's on that in the talks, or not in the talks, in the options. Rob, Adrian, Pedro Munoz, prelim Pedro, he's up there. So I think there's some good fights. It could be none of those three. I really don't know. I haven't talked to UFC once since my last fight. I know Jan and Aljo just got announced for March 5th in Vegas, if I could fight on that card, that would be ideal. I just don't think that's going to be, you know, that means I'd start camp in 2 weeks. And I don't like starting camp out of shape. I start camp in very good shape. So my fight camp isn't about, oh, I have to get in great shape. It is about that, but it's also about taking the time off when necessary. If you go into fight camp and you're not in shape, you can't really take days off. I think your coach said it takes confidence to take a day off. I remember that there a long time ago, and I knew I said that last time we talked, but it's true. That rings really true to me. And I feel like I've gotten training camps pretty dialed in.
Is that a lifestyle choice that you try and live by year round, or do you do what some fighters do? And did he do a pre-camp first? He said, right, okay, so I'm going to be fighting on this day. I want to start hard 6 or 8 weeks out. So therefore I'll start reining it in maybe 12, 13, 14 weeks. You know what I mean? Just trying to get the weight down a little bit. Cause you're right. When the training camp becomes about making weight, that's detrimental to what you're trying to do. It shouldn't be about the scale. It's about your opponent.
Yeah, absolutely. That last fight camp, I was walking around 2-3 pounds under the previous 4 or 5 camps. And it was so nice because I was getting to a point where, like, damn, I might have to go to 45. I feel like I'm going to die at weigh-ins. This last camp, I was like 2 pounds less, like the whole camp. And it was really nice. I got made weight, felt great. So, you know, I think definitely, realistically, I need 8 weeks. You know, I would take a short notice fight. I remember when Peter or Aljo pulled out the first time, I think it was like 4 weeks. And I was saying, I was trying to get that fight. Did I think I would get it? No. Was I serious about taking that fight on 4 weeks notice? Yes. I mean, that kind of a level of fight I would take. One of my favorite moments ever in the UFC is when you took that fight against Luke and knocked his ass out. That was legendary. And so, yeah, I mean, but ideally 8 week fight camp with me training consistently before that. Like, I wouldn't want to get this cast off big. All right, I got 8 weeks to train. I wouldn't want that.
You are 27 and you're talking about difficulty making 135. Do you think as you get older, there might be 145 featherweight fights in your future?
I feel like I could make 135 probably my entire career. You know, I walk around 156. I don't really get bigger than that. But I also think I win the championship belt. And then you start talking about the champ. You start talking about super fights. You know, my skills right now, I believe, are very high. I think in the next 3-4 years, weight's not going to matter as much. Right now, I mean, weight matters. You don't want to go up and fight a top 145, or if you're a 35. I mean, it's just the weight. They have weight classes for a reason. So, you know, I think 3-4 years, even if I'm still walking around 157, 158, I think I can go up and fight 145. But I think I'd say like 100% I'm going to fight at 145 eventually.
Yesterday, there were, as you mentioned, the big news, Aljo and Jan finally got a rematch. Obviously, your division. How do you see that one going down? And because, like, you know, obviously the first fight, Jan was, he was cruising to a victory until he fucked up. Do you see it going down a similar way?
I do-ish, but I also think Aljamain's he's smart. He's not a stupid guy. He's yep. very, very high level. His resume speaks for itself. I think he went in with the wrong game plan. He went in there and gassed out in a couple rounds. And if you watch Peter's fights, you know he's going to cruise for a little bit, try to figure out, and then start putting on the pressure in the later rounds. He does that every fight. Aljamain Sterling's got to see that, got to recognize that, and come in with a different game plan. I think Aljamain has skills, and he has these skills. He could beat Peter. I don't necessarily see it happening, but I'm not counting him out. He's a top bantamweight for a reason, and I think it's going to be a very interesting fight.
Did you see that video that Aljo put on? I think it was yesterday or this morning, and he's playing the guitar with the belt. I love Aljamain. He's awesome, but that's got to be fucking one of the cringiest things I ever saw.
I didn't see it. I don't really
you gotta check it out, buddy.
I
love Aljo. He's cool as hell. He's a great guy.
I'm gonna go watch it 100% after this, but I didn't see it, and that's the thing. Like, I post a cringy video, everyone's going to see it. Someone, the champ, posts a video. Someone who's on social media quite a bit, I didn't see it. And that kind of speaks for, you know, I mean, numbers talk. And I think right now when you talk about who has the biggest draw in the bantamweight division, I truly believe that's me. That's kind of where the unranked champ thing came from. I figured I have, you know, I have the biggest draw. I'm a champ in a different sense of how other people see what the champ is.
Well, I saw what you said to Brett Okamoto, and to be honest, I agree with you. You are the biggest star in the 135 division, even including Aljamain and Petr Yan. You know, I haven't seen or analyzed the social media numbers, but there's a reason why you're always on the pay-per-views, and there's a reason why I wanted to get you on the podcast today. Do you know what I mean? Because, I'm not kissing your ass, you are a star. How many fights in a perfect world, if you were to plan it, for you to get to Jan or Aljamain or whoever is the champ? Have you sat down and thought, okay, this time 18 months or 2 years, you'll be fighting for the belt?
Honestly, ever since that Cheeto fight, I just really try not to plan too far ahead. I had big plans and all this and that, and it's hard to go because you never know what's going to happen in a fight. You can get your nerve kicked, for example, and you just, it's hard to say. I have two more fights on my contract. And I really want, you know, I think I'm in good grace with UFC. We have a great relationship, and I don't think my career is ever going to be about like the Francis or John Jones, about the money. So I mean, ideally, I go fight these two fights out, and then who knows? I could be fighting for a belt. I could fight Rob and then Pedro then Rob. So I could fight two more fights and then fight for the belt. But that's in a perfect world. I realistically, I have no idea how many more fights, but I can't imagine it being too many more if I go out there and do what I always do and go out there and put on a performance. That's like the thing a lot of people don't get. They're like, I'm winning all these fights. I'm like, yeah, but you fucking are boring. You're not fun. This is an entertainment business. I mean, it's the fight business, but it's also an entertainment business, and it's half and half. You can't just be a great fighter nowadays.
No, absolutely. 100%. You mentioned Cheeto a moment ago. Obviously, you know I'm boys with Cheeto as well, yep. But I've got to ask you, would that be something on your new contract? Because Cheeto's doing great things. You know, he's a great fighter. You're a great fighter. You had that fight there. I know how you both feel about that. But does a rematch, finally settling the score, is that something that you want to have one day?
Oh, 100%. That rematch is going to happen 100%. And I know Cheeto thinks he won. I mean, he won the fight fair and square. But I also know at that level, that's just not how you want to end the fight. If I kick someone, if that happened to me, I wouldn't be I like knocking people out. I like getting, I go for the finish. I go for the sweet finish. I let Thomas Almeida back up because I want a sweeter finish. That's the kind of finishes I want. And if that's the kind of finishes he wants, that, I mean, that speaks to his whatever. That's, if he thinks like, yeah, that's a win, he can have that, whatever. But in my eyes, my mind, you know, in a lot of people's mind now, I'm undefeated still. You see it everywhere. And yeah, the rematch will happen 100%. Would like it to be on the new contract because I do think that is a big fight.
Yeah. No, it's a huge fight. When I Googled your name, just to do a little research to see what was new with you right before we did this, I saw a thing with you and Cheeto and something about, I don't know, giving money to people in the streets or whatever. What's going on there? Because I never got around to reading the article. It looked like a little bit of clickbait or something. But what was that? What's happening?
You know, and you can let me know whose side you're on here. Christmas Eve, I went to Walmart and handed out a couple $1,000s, and I vlogged.
Oh, shit.
I posted it on YouTube. I was walking around Walmart handing $100 bills out to people. And Cheeto said, you don't need to record stuff like that, you piece of shit. So I don't know. That kind of shows me that he's bitter about that. He knows that wasn't a win. He knows that I'm undefeated still. That wasn't a fair win. And that kind of just proves to me that he's kind of thinking like that too. Because I mean, I don't know. I you go look at the comments on that video and people were like, "Oh my God, that made my day. I'm in tears." Like I had people text me like, "That was so cool. Like that inspired me, motivated me." And you know, I just handed out money and had my sister record it, made a vlog. And
yes.
He was not happy about that for some reason.
I see his angle. I see how he's criticizing you because, of course, you guys are rivals, right? You're two of the biggest stars. You are probably on a collision course at some point. So he's going to take any opportunity to talk shit. But well done for you. Well done to you, should I say, because, like, you know, that makes a lot of difference in some people's lives. So that's very decent of you. Another name, and again, I fucking hate to bring him up, but Cody Garbrandt, he went down to 125. Didn't go his way on that night, and I saw your reaction of that live. But now he's still mentioning you, and you know, I think I know why, because why wouldn't you mention your name? Because you're one of the biggest stars in the sport now. I get that. Is that something you're interested in, or is that just, you know, in the rear view mirror now?
It's just tough. You know, I go out there and beat him. I do not see it doing much for me right now. My whole UFC career, basically, I'm going out there and fighting guy, and it's a risky fight. So I'm fighting people that they don't know. Paulian Paiva is a fucking beast. He's very good, black belt, young stud, but no one really knew of his name, and I would go out there and fight him. Now it's like I go out there and beat Cody. He's 1-6 or something in the last seven. Yeah. I think he's won one fight since 2017. I go out there and beat him. It's like doesn't really do what it would have 3 or 4 fights ago. I go out there and beat him. I go out there and lose to Cody, who's 1-7 and got knocked out. That does a lot. That does a lot of negative damage towards me. So I just don't think that's realistically the next fight. Potentially, I would think he would have to go out there and get a win. He's not in the rankings at 35 anymore, which isn't really that big of a deal. Adrian Yanez isn't either, and I'm saying I'd fight him. He did just get knocked out at 125 by Kaikara France, who I like, I'm a fan of Kaikara, but Kaikara France is 5'4", 6'6", Michael Bisping. Yeah.
Of course you are. Listen, Harrington, our producer on here, was trying to get me to talk a little bit of shit. Harrington, he's put it in the chat here. He said, there's a rumor going around. Harrington, you ask away.
Yeah, I didn't want to put these words in Mike's mouth. But yeah, there is a rumor that on UFC Reddit right now that your computer background, some sleuths caught one of your Twitch streams. Is it Cody Garbrandt laid out with Kaikara France over him?
No, that is a complete rumor, actually. I didn't. I honestly, after Cody got knocked out, I got asked in the press conference, like, what do you want to talk? Like, what do you want to say? And I feel bad for him. He's lost a lot of fights in a row. And I don't have really anything negative to say about him. And I'm not promoting him getting knocked out in that way. So that is a rumor. But that's kind of funny.
See, that's the side of thing that people don't get. You know what I mean? Because, of course, when you're rivals, you talk a lot of shit. But you don't take satisfaction out of seeing somebody led there unconscious. Because, you know, as fighters, we're all on the same mission. We're all on the same journey, the same path, whatever you want to call it. And it's tough. It's hard. And some people have success like he did, and then you fall off pretty quick. You know, and it could happen to anybody. I'd be remiss if I never asked you about this sparring incident where you kicked someone so hard and they shit their pants all over the place and you continued sparring and you were stepping in his shit and all sorts.
Yeah. I mean, this was when I was either a very, very young pro or I might have been still an amateur. It was shortly after I moved out to Arizona, and there was just this jacked older guy that lived in our apartment complex. Tim and I, my coach, we lived in an apartment complex, just a fucking ghetto ass. It was like $600 a month, ghetto apartment. And this short dude would walk around jacked, and like we were talking to him, and he's like, you fight? And he's like, there's no way you fight. And then he wanted to spar, and Tim worked at the UFC gym. So we just drove over, and like it wasn't like a mean thing. It was like like we drove him there. We drove him to there and
yeah, made him shit his pants along the way.
But I didn't hurt him to the head. I was very conscious of, I don't want to, you know, knock him out or hurt him. But I'd landed a nasty southpaw to orthodox body kick and just, yeah, I mean, honestly, I didn't know because I had my little dog there too. And he was like, oh, your dog's shit. And I'm like, fuck, that sucks. But then we saw the video and you could see the shit fall out of his shorts. And it was pretty fucking disgusting. But it was a pretty legendary moment.
No, that's hilarious. It really is. It's disgusting as well. So I'm intrigued about this limousine. So the Twitch guys are flying in and then you're all just going to be in the limo cruising around. I got to say, I like that. Top marks for originality because I do the YouTube stuff and I'm trying to get out and branch out because nobody wants to see the same thing over and over. How did you get the idea for the limo? Because I love it. I'm going to steal it.
Dude, yeah, steal it. I flew them all out last year and I put on a fight card for my Twitch subscribers.
Oh, shit. No way. Garage.
I had a cage in my garage and I had like four fights on this card and they're all Twitch subscribers and they fought and we had to take like two cars everywhere we went. We had to take two cars. So I'm flying all the same guys down again at the end of the month. And I'm going to take them out to the club in Scottsdale. And, you know, I was like, this will be perfect. We'll take the limo and I'm going to have my brother drive us around and just, you know, have a good time, you know, probably make a vlog out of it. I guess I probably shouldn't according to Cheeto, but I'll probably vlog it and it'll be fun. And, you know, it's a good way to interact with the fans. I love doing stuff like that. I'm actually, two of them are going to be driving down from St. Louis. And they're actually moving into, I have a gaming apartment across the street where I game. It has two rooms I don't even use. So two of them are actually going to drive down and live there and start their lives. You know, they both live with their parents right now. So I know it's going to be weird for them to live by themselves, but they're going to start a whole new life down here in Arizona and live at my apartment.
Look at this. Life is good for Sean O'Malley. Everywhere I go, I bump into you. You're at the Jake Paul fight.
Yep.
You're doing NFTs. You're on top of the UFC. What's going on with the NFTs? Did you and Imran get something sorted?
Yeah. You know, obviously know Imran. Imran's literally,
of course, shout out Team Sanibel.
Hands down, the coolest guy I've ever met.
He's the best.
He's probably he's my right hand man when it comes to anything business. He's there. And you know, we actually just were in Dallas together last weekend with the Complexity Gaming. I signed with a gaming company. We were at the Cowboys game and Imran was there with me the whole time. And but yeah, the NFTs is just another community we're building. It's similar to, like, you know, I just love obviously interacting with my fans. They're going to be living at my place. So, and they both have NFTs, by the way. So I think it's just another cool way to interact with the fans and give back. We're doing a bunch of giveaways every single month for NFT holders, and it's going to be a good way for fans to be able to interact with me.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. You're doing great things, Sean.
Thank you.
You should be proud of yourself, mate.
And thank you.
You should be an inspiration to a lot of young fighters because you're doing it absolutely perfect. We'll let you go, my friend. Enjoy whatever it is you're doing next. When do you think we'll see you? If you had to bet or guess when you're back in the octagon, when do you think that'll be?
It's tricky because I've went on record and say I only fight in Vegas. I love fighting in Vegas. It makes sense for me. It's a quick.
It's the fight capital of the world.
A quick little private jet to Vegas.
There you go.
It's nice. So I'll probably fight in Vegas. I know they have that March 5th card. That's like the pay-per-view in Vegas in the first quarter of the year. I don't see myself being able to make it in time for that one, but I'm not going to say no because it could happen. I would say Vegas, and I don't know if they have a pay-per-view in April or May, and I don't know if UFC wants to put me on a fight night. So I'd say first quarter of the year, ideally, but really it just kind of depends when the UFC is in Vegas.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, listen, Sean, whenever it is, can't wait to see it again. Hold on. He won't come by Brooklyn, New York. Oh, there's Harrington again. Say, what's your problem with New York?
Taxes.
Hey, fucking don't get me started. Oh, my God. Taxes, bro.
Aren't happening.
Try living in California.
Yeah, no, I'm a Vegas fighter. Or I know Arizona's. I think Arizona's taxes, obviously, that's where I live, are better than other places. So yeah. I'm a businessman and a fighter. So I'm not fighting in New York.
Well, keep doing what you're doing, man. Can't wait to see you back in there, Sean. Thank you very much for taking the time today.
I appreciate
you, buddy. All the see best, man. Take it easy. And there he is, the one and only Sean O'Malley. And I mean what I say, that guy is doing absolutely fantastic things. All younger fighters should take a leaf out of his book, take a leaf, whatever. Take an example, because he's doing the right thing. That's what I always spoke about when I damaged my retina and I knew that my time as a fighter was limited. I was trying to open as many doors, because when you're done as a fighter, not too many people are interested in the old washed up ex-bum fighter. But when you got that platform, you got to try and open as many doors as possible. And that's what Sean's doing right now. He's popular. He's on top of the world. He fights like a motherfucker. He's entertaining in and out of the octagon. And thank you once again, Sean, for taking the time. Anyway, quick ad break. We'll be right back. Today, we are welcoming back IP Vanish VPN to the show. You know the deal. IP Vanish has been a longtime sponsor of ours, so it's so great to have them back. And let me tell you about IP Vanish. If you care about the security of your online activity, and you really should, the easiest way to protect yourself is with IP Vanish VPN. Rated 4 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot, IP Vanish provides an encrypted connection for all of your internet traffic, helping to prevent websites, Wi-Fi providers, or even hackers from intercepting your data. You know, we're talking all your financial details, personal information, online activity is completely safe from threats with IP Vanish. Okay, you're not going to get hacked. You're not going to have people logging into your bank account, people hacking your Instagram, your social media, and all that stuff, and changing your passwords and blackmailing you. Believe me, that stuff goes on. Okay, IP Vanish eradicates all of that. And also, if you're in other countries, you can maybe access certain pornographic websites. What do I know? But still, get started. If you're in Abu Dhabi, trust me, it's going to come in handy. Get started with this limited time offer and save 50% off your monthly and annual subscriptions by going to ipvanish.com/believe. 50% off, ladies and gentlemen. One more time, that is ipvanish.com/believe. And that's all lowercase, by the way. Okay, where were we? Harrington, what have we got, my friend? With lots of big topics. I say we start with a story about Francis Ngannou and Tyson Fury, because this is big. Harrington, do you have a quote that you can give us, just give me and Jesse and the people listening a bit of color, a bit of background? I know the situation, but go ahead.
Yeah, so Tyson just, you know, he put it out there, an image of him and Ngannou on a fight poster, and he asked, who would like to see me fight this beast? Boxing rules at UFC gloves, and he tagged Dana White and Francis Ngannou in it.
Challenge. Hey, whose idea was Francis that? Whose idea was that fight?
Yeah?
Mine. Mine. Verifiable. I thought of that like 3-4 weeks. Well, I mean, I thought about that a long time ago, but like I actually hit up Francis's manager with that about a month ago. And I was like, maybe three, four weeks ago. And I was like, what if you guys did a boxing match with Tyson Fury in MMA gloves? Just because it's like, if they do a regular boxing match, you know, if you're just thinking about driving interest in the event, I mean, there's going to be the curiosity how it's going to go, because Francis is a heavy hitter. But at the very least, I would say 98% of people are going to think that Tyson's just going to eat him alive with boxing gloves on. You turn that into a crossover fight in MMA gloves, and that's a whole different ballgame. I did a bunch of videos on it right afterwards too. And
The reality is, I mean, listen, we all want to see that, because it would be a spectacle, you know, and it would be all almost like one of these freak show fights that we see. The reality is, though, that I'm a big fan of Francis Ngannou. I love watching that guy. I think everybody is kind of, you know, he captures the imagination. He's got that crazy knockout power. He looks, he's fucking terrifying to look at. Do you know what I mean? He's a terrifying human being. But in a boxing ring against somebody like Tyson Fury, it wouldn't go well for him. You know, and anytime we see MMA fighters go over to boxing, of course, the big one was Conor and Floyd Mayweather. of course, we were giving them an advantage because, you know, they're specialized in boxing and we're mixed martial artists. But it's deeper than that, because obviously boxing gloves to MMA gloves, that changes things big time, as you mentioned there. The holes in defending the shots and all the rest of it. The fact that boxers wear boots, MMA fighters are barefoot, you know what I mean? And believe it or not, that makes a big, big difference. You know,
I hadn't even thought about that.
Yeah, no, it's a big one. What is this, what we're looking at here? So, yeah, there it is. How about MMA gloves with boxing gloves? How about MMA rules with boxing gloves? MMA rules with boxing gloves?
Oh, he also, yeah, but after that, he said something else too. He responded again and said he would fight him under any rule set.
Who said that? Francis?
Francis did, yeah.
Yeah, well, Francis would. Yeah, Francis is going to want to do any other rule set than boxing, because boxing, no offense, Francis Harrington, say your point. Tyson Fury would smoke him. He would. It's just the different fucking sports. Harrington, what were we going to say?
Yeah, simply just wanted to clarify. And Ngannou said that he has to handle business on the 22nd. Then after that, he's down for literally any kind of special rule set that Tyson Fury wants to do.
Well, of course, because there's going to be a massive payday at the end of it. You know, Tyson Fury is one of the biggest, well, he's probably one of the biggest stars in boxing right now. But as I say, barefoot against boots, that changes things big time. Also, a boxing ring, MMA fighters aren't used to having to, the craftsmanship that goes into boxing, and you corner an MMA fighter, they're not used to getting out of that corner. So if I was going to take a boxing fight against one of the big boxers, I'd say, okay, we'll do it in MMA gloves, we'll do it in bare feet, and we'll do it in a six-sided ring or an octagon. Fuck that. Why is everything going to be on your side as the boxer? In the boots, in the gloves, in the ring, you know, already. I mean, they're already getting a specialized rule set, which they have done from an early age, and that is all they do. You know, for a mixed martial artist, while they're defending takedowns, where they're learning to wrestle, jiu-jitsu, all the rest of it, all they're doing is working on the footwork, working on the combinations, working on the delivery of the punches and all the rest of it.
So you would go MMA gloves in a ring with ropes in a circle.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. I mean, maybe not what Triller did or anything, certainly not in a fucking triangle.
Yeah.
But yeah, which was crazy. But yeah, you know, I just try and even the playing field a little bit. I mean, of course, there is a part of the challenge that you want to go over to boxing, because MMA guys, good MMA guys, can box well. You know what I mean? I mean, Conor did really well against Floyd Mayweather in those few opening rounds until he gassed out, you know.
Yeah.
So kudos to him. But as I say, the it's stacked against the MMA guy every time you go over to boxing.
The thing that makes me nervous about all this talk about it is, like, I'm an enormous Francis fan. I love Francis's story. I don't know if you've ever seen, but Mix Molly Whopper did this 3-part documentary about Francis's story of how he got to the UFC, and it is unbelievable. Like, anybody who watches that and they're not rooting for Francis afterward is a sociopath. I mean, there's just no other way to even describe it. He started training when he was like 24 years old. Like, he just, but anyway, but so.
Yeah, no. He was raised in Cameroon in a little poor village.
Yeah.
He was approached by gangs. I mean, this is all on his Wikipedia page. He stayed on the straight and narrow. He went off to Europe. He got arrested and thrown in jail for a couple of years for crossing borders illegally. Then he was sleeping on park benches. Then he started training MMA. And now he's the heavyweight champion of the motherfucking world. Do you know what I mean? Absolutely. How are you not inspired by such an incredible story? Do you know what I mean?
Totally.
But he's got a tough fight next weekend, though. Well, 2 weeks from now, against Cyril Garn. I just worry for him getting distracted. All this talk about Tyson Fury is fantastic and maybe a lot of money to be earned, but you got to focus on the task at hand.
That is exactly what I was going to say. I was going to say that you look at Conor in, you know, if you look at the last two Conor and Dustin fights, the first one, you could just see that, you know, because you knew Conor's paradigm had signed Manny Pacquiao. And that's all they were talking about, was they were going to do this Dustin fight and they were going to do the Pacquiao boxing match. And you could tell by how Conor fought that he's doing a lot of boxing. You know what I mean? And it's like, dude, you look past a guy, they're going to, like, this, it's a recipe for disaster, especially Cyril Garn, dude. The guy's a murder machine.
Yeah. No, it's an obvious story as old as time. You see it all the time. You look past it. And that's why fighters always say, when you ask them, say, what do you want after this? And they say, oh, I'm focusing on this fight, which sounds like a cliched answer, but it's the correct thing to say. Anyway, lots of other stuff. Harrington, what else we got, bud?
All right, here. Let's see. So, I mean, our UFC 272, big announcement yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Two titles on the line. Main event, Volkanovski versus Holloway for the third time. Co-main event, Jan versus Sterling. They're combining the interim and the title belts for bantamweight. A couple other big fights.
Yeah, yeah. Hold on. Before we discuss this, Brian, can you just bring up, it's on Twitter, but it's probably on Aljamain Sterling's Instagram page as well. I mentioned it to Sean O'Malley. He is playing the guitar with the belt and he's singing, "I'm going to beat your..." Did you see it?
I didn't see it, but
listen, I love Aljo. He's a great guy and I feel like an asshole for saying this, but it's pretty cringe. It's pretty
cringe.
Oh,
I'm sure.
It's bad. Yeah. It's bad.
Yeah, yeah. I just mean, like, when he won the belt the way that he did, I said to everybody, I was like, the correct play is to lean in as hard as you can to "now I'm the champ." You know, because if everybody's going to be like, "Oh, he's not the real champ," then just throw it in their face and bait them to watch the next fight, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Brian, have we got... Here we are. Check this out.
"I'm going to beat that boy's ass. I'm going to beat that boy's ass. Gracias, dobro utra, pero I'm going to punish your boy and there's nothing you can do about it."
Oh... I mean, listen, UFC champion. Why is he speaking Italian? Was that Italian?
It didn't sound like Russian.
"Hey, fuck you. Yes, brother, listen to me. I'm going to smash your face in." There was none of that. It didn't sound anything like that. It sounded like Italian, which I don't quite understand. Hey, God bless him. Listen, I hope he goes out there and has a fantastic fight. I'm leaning towards Piotr Jan in that fight. And what was the other one? There was another announcement as well in the same division.
Max and Volkanovski 3.
Oh, shit. Yeah, that's a big one. What do you think about that?
I think I think the second fight was I basically predicted exactly what was going to happen in the second fight pretty close, just because it's actually related to Piotr Jan. Like, Holloway and Jan fight the same way, where they seem to go like 60% for the first two rounds, and then right around the middle of the fight is when they really turn it on. And Holloway in that first fight, I was like, I bet you that he recognized Volkanovski's not going to gas out. And so he's probably going to go heavy in the first couple rounds for the first time. And that's exactly what he did. He won those first two rounds. And then he kind of got outpointed in the last three. So I have no idea. I think it's going to be another incredibly, incredibly close fight.
To a certain degree, I kind of feel for Volkanovski a little bit. You know what I mean? Because the general consensus was that Holloway won those two fights, but he didn't. They were close. They were really, really close fights. And you can never call it a robbery anytime it's that close. And I felt bad because at the time I said to Volkanovski on the post-fight show, because I was commentating the second fight, and then I was like, "I thought Holloway won." And then Volkanovski showed up. And I'm like, well, now I've got to have to say it to his face. Otherwise, people are going to say, 5 minutes before you were on, he was saying that he thought you lost. So I said it to him, but in a very respectful way, of course. Yeah. And now with the fighting again, which of course is the fight to make. Holloway's gone off. He beat Kelvin Cato, beat EIA Rodriguez. Sensational performances.
Incredible.
Both of those fights were just fucking insane. But it's like, whenever they're that close, odds on at some point, Holloway's going to get the nod. Do you know? Because they are so evenly matched. They really are. Look at those two fights. There's 10 rounds. Now we're going to get 11 to 15. They are so even. You know what I mean? Yeah. Of course, it's going to be interesting to see what adjustments they make and how they approach the fight a little bit different. But if it's razor close again, right, there's a good chance that maybe Holloway gets the decision, because it was literally a coin flip how close those fights were. But what are they going to do if Holloway gets it? They're going to give Volkanovski a rematch again? They're just going to keep fighting each other the whole time? Do you know what I mean? It's kind of a weird situation.
It is weird. And it's weird also at 45 because... like, who else is there? You got Ortega, except Volkanovski already beat Ortega, and so did Holloway. So it's like, let's say you had something crazy where one of them like definitively won, like just blitzkrieg the other guy. Who's next in line at 45?
I have no idea. I mean, because Holloway's probably just beating them. Yes, Harrington.
The only name is Giga, really? No.
Well, Giga's fighting Kelvin Cater next weekend. Thank God we got some UFC stuff back to talk about. Yeah. And you're right. If Giga beats Kelvin Cater, which isn't a foregone conclusion, then of course Giga Chikadze would be there. He's on quite the win streak. Harrington, Jesse, any of you guys got any information on Darren Till and why he's thrown off Instagram?
No, I saw you guys sent that to me and I had no idea why.
Yeah, Harrington, what have you got? Because you put it in the notes, and I messaged Darren. I texted him. I said, hold on. I said,
why are you asking me for info if you have Darren's number?
Because you put it in the fucking notes, okay? But I have. You're right. That is a fair question. I went straight to Darren Till. I went straight to the horse's mouth. But what do you know about it, Harrington?
What I know about it is what every MMA website knows, is that Darren Till got shut down at 2 million followers, and Darren had the coolest response ever. He's like, yeah, social media is kind of lame. I have goals to focus on for 2022. So, yeah, you know, the distraction of Instagram seems to be out of his training life right now.
Which is good. That is a good thing, because it is just a distraction in life. You know what I mean? That's one thing I'm trying to do. Less social fucking media. Do you know what I mean? My day starts the same every day. It's a combination of news on the TV, coffee in my hand, and social media all at the same time, and emails and whatnot. And then I waste too much time. So I text Darren. I said, hey, Darren. I said, why did they delete your account? He said, I haven't got a clue, mate. It's been 5 weeks. Yeah. Weird. 2 million followers.
If he's not talking about, the jabs or the mandates, it's got to be something.
Well, exactly. Exactly.
It's got to be something that he made fun of somebody in a way that, you know, bullied.
Well, he did get suspended, I think, a little bit ago. He made a joke about some transgender person. So it wasn't even bad. And I think they suspended him. So maybe, I don't know. I have no idea. I've never been suspended on social media. What about you, Jesse? Are you a controversial type on there?
I don't think so. Certainly, like, you know, I certainly don't try to be. And I just don't think that. So if you're talking like the stuff that Darren Till does, where he makes fun of people, that stuff's funny. And I guess you're kind of in the danger zone there. But talking about really divisive topics, like on social media, like Instagram, Twitter, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me, because you're not going to change anyone's mind. You're just looking for like positive feedback from people who already agree with you. You know what I mean?
A lot of my friends back home in England, they're always getting like temporarily suspended on Facebook and stuff like that. And yes, I still use Facebook.
Currently not able to post on Facebook.
Okay, perfect. Perfect, perfect. So now we can have a bit of background. What was the crime?
I think I called somebody a cunt.
Oh, that's not bad. Is that it? Is that all it takes?
I mean, maybe a lot of times I called somebody a cunt, but not like a machine gun in a row, just like over
tantamount to a
time.
Hate crime,
I guess. I don't know. Yeah. I call people all sorts of names on the internet.
They went to your comment history and did command find and then wrote cunt. And it was like, this is common.
Is that
practice.
A thing? Can you do that? Command find?
Oh, they can for sure. They've got anything you ever. I actually know a dude at Facebook who's a buddy of mine. And he said, he's like, without betraying secrets that we're not supposed to say, they never delete data there. Never. Anything you've ever put on Facebook, anything you've ever, like, if you've ever done like a voice recording into Facebook, if you've ever put a message to like to someone on Facebook and deleted it, that shit's not fucking deleted. It's deleted on, like, they've got them all.
Sure. But on their back end server or whatever, they've got it all. Yeah, no. A lot of my mates, they're always getting suspended on Facebook. And I never know why they do that. But still, anyway, Floyd Mayweather is in the news again at the moment.
Great topic.
Before we get into Floyd Mayweather.
Please, Brian, what is on the tip of your tongue?
Chael Sonnen just put out a video as we were recording about the Patty interview that we put out on Monday.
Really?
He's not happy.
Why is he not happy?
Well, is it a YouTube video that he put out? Yeah.
So we can't play the whole thing because it'll take too long. But do we have the gist? Look at this. This is our fucking producer multitasking. He's producing the show, but he's watching Chael Sonnen at the same fucking time. You're a traitor, Brian.
I could play it for you. No, I have alerts set. I could play it for you guys and then cut it out, and then you can talk about it.
Okay, let's do that, because I actually do want to know. Shout out Paddy the Batty. He joined us on Monday, spoke to us for a few minutes whilst eating chicken wings.
The title is Paddy the Batty Has a Case of the Stupids.
Oh.
Yeah, so Chael's beef, what he was saying there is that Cowboy wanted to get on the London show. That wasn't reported. What was reported was that Cowboy wanted to get on the pay-per-view in March, which is the 5th. And then he was trying to get on that against Patty. There was never...
That fight got made.
No. From everything I read, it was not supposed to be in London. It was supposed to be on the pay-per-view.
5th of March.
Because I remember
the one we just spoke about with Aljamain Sterling and Piotr Jan.
That's a hell of a card too.
Paddy shut that down though straight away, which is surprising because March 19th is the date that they've got pegged for London, assuming everything goes ahead. And obviously he's a big deal. He had a big debut and having him on the London card would make total sense. Yeah. But then when I heard 5th of March, I thought, oh shit, they're giving him the fucking pay-per-view treatment. They're really trying to build this kid. But he shot that down unequivocally. But I don't recall him saying anything about clickbait with Chael Sonnen, Harrington.
I mean, he threw it in there as an offhand comment. He was saying that the Donald Cerrone fight never materialized. You know, you hear Paddy tell it. He says the UFC's never called him with an opponent. Mm. So there would be no mention of a Cerrone fight. So in his mind, I could see where he's saying, you know, there was no side of that ever materializing. I guess Chael's just having fun.
I fucking hate when people say that I clickbaited him. I hate that shit.
Well. I doubt Chael really gives a fuck. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, I can't imagine Chael's getting all bent out of shape. Do you know what I mean? He's just doing it for reaction, I think. Anyway, moving on. But thank you, Brian, for bringing that up to our attention. All right, listen, let's just hear from Shopify.com. Listen, if you have a business, then you need an online presence, okay? And that is essentially what Shopify gives to you, okay? It's an e-commerce site. Basically, you got an online shop. So whatever you're doing, you want to scale up, okay? So even if you're a startup or an upstart, right, Shopify gives entrepreneurs the resources once reserved for big businesses. Scaling your business is a journey of endless possibilities, okay? Like mine, Shopify powers over 1.7 million businesses from first sale to full scale. You can reach customers online and across social networks with an ever-growing suite of channel integrations and apps, including Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Pinterest, and more. You gain insights as you grow with detailed reporting of conversion rates, profit margins, and beyond. More than a store, Shopify grows with you. This is the possibility which is powered by Shopify. As I say, Shopify instantly lets you accept all major payment methods. So that's very convenient. It has thousands of integration and third-party apps from on-demand printing to accounting to advanced chatbots and beyond. As I say, if you have a business and you need that online presence, Shopify is the way you want to do it. And of course, we have a tremendous offer for you. Go to Shopify.com/believe, all lowercase, and you will get a 14-day free trial and get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Grow your business with Shopify today. Go to Shopify.com/believe right now for a free 14-day trial. You're going to love this. Join the 1.7 million businesses that have helped improve their sales and their basic professionalism. Shopify.com/believe. That's the website. All right, good luck with it all. Right, where were we? Floyd Mayweather, Harrington, give us a lowdown on what he's doing.
So Floyd Mayweather, he says he is going to fight this kid. He's a YouTuber. His name is Money Kicks on YouTube. Rashad Belhassa, don't have a UFC pronunciation guide on that one yet. I will work on it. February 20th, they're going to fight on a helipad, which is pretty sick.
Yeah, no, it's cool.
I can tell you exactly how this is getting put together.
How?
This kid is, look him up, image search him. Like the first one that I found is him on a, in front of a Ferrari with it like all Louis Vuitton, like minted out. Like this kid's like, this kid's like some kind of billionaire's kid.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of rich people out in Dubai and fine. Listen, I'll be honest. God bless Floyd Mayweather. I've got no issue with this whatsoever. I know a lot of people might be talking shit. Floyd Mayweather had his career. He went through many years of fighting the best boxers on the planet. And he did a tremendous job. He earned a tremendous amount of money and he was a tremendous champion. He's retired now. There's nothing wrong. If he can find these avenues to make millions of dollars fighting some rich kid that's going to provide no challenge on a fucking helipad in Dubai, which by the way sounds cool as fuck, right? God bless him. He's retired. Do you know what I mean? He's just cashing. He's still having a little bit of fun. He'll do a bit of training. It keeps him in shape and it sticks God knows how many millions in his back pocket. So it's a win-win, I think.
I totally agree. I've been saying that forever that, like, if you really want to look at Floyd's career in making money, like if you include the Conor fight, he's made like, I don't know, $300-400 million since retiring. Like he retired and is still finding ways to make dough like that. But he didn't. Logan Paul is saying that he hasn't paid him for that last fight. And so did and actually so did the investors that put that show on are saying that he owes them money too.
So, oh really?
Yeah.
Do Harrington O'Brien or you, Jesse? Does anybody have any kind of inkling? Was there any kind of reports on the Mayweather versus Logan Paul fight in terms of pay per view sales? Does anybody have any idea?
I heard it's sold a million buys, but really?
I can't believe that. But still, but listen, hey, you can't hate him. And as you say, he's making tremendous money. Go ahead.
So the number that Wikipedia has, yes. I think it's like pretty much regarded as the you know, this is Showtime, so it might be real. A million pay-per-view buys for the event.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Hey, listen, so therefore Logan Paul's got a lot of money coming his way as and when he gets paid. So did Floyd promote that event?
Yeah, I mean, I because like I know he was the merchant of record for the Conor fight. I think that his team takes it in and distributes the funds. But that's what it's. I don't know. I mean, Logan Paul says Floyd owes him the money, so you got to assume that it's his promotions company that took the cash and then.
Yeah, well, we were talking about this recently. I said the pay per view money takes a long time to come in. When I fought on pay per view for the UFC when I was the champ, I think with 2 years later, I was still getting checks here and there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because there's a lot of different avenues to collect the money from. Do you know what I mean? There's all the different digital partners and TV partners and all the rest of it. Yeah. So it's not like a month later you get a check, boom, there it all is. It comes in dribs and drabs and trickles in slowly. So I don't know. It sounds like I'm making excuses for Floyd Mayweather. I'm not. I couldn't care less, whether he's ripped off Logan Paul or not. I've got no skin in the game. But I know from my experience, generally that stuff does take a while.
Yeah, I was going to comment. I saw your the video that you put up today about Oliveira and choosing to fight Conor, which obviously is all common sense stuff. But I was going to say, I actually wrote down that I wanted to bring up that I thought the way you handled the being champion and getting that GSP fight was like a fucking masterclass of how to be a prize fighter who has the belt. Like you had to fight for that thing, dude. Like,
well, to be fair, that's what a lot of people think. And I did, obviously I wanted to fight George St. Pierre. Number one, he's a legendary fighter. And secondly, a big pay-per-view attraction. Yeah. But the way that kind of came around was kind of organic because I went in the cage and challenged the winner of Whittaker and Yoel Romero. Whittaker won. We were supposed to do the Ultimate Fighter. And we actually, right before that fight took place, I negotiated with Dana and Hunter Campbell an appearance fee for doing the Ultimate Fighter. I said, I'll do it, you know, as a champion, but you know, you're gonna have to pay. And we shook hands there. And then afterwards, a few days later, I called Dana. I'm like, what's going on? Are we doing the Ultimate Fighter with Whittaker? And he said, no, they're making all kinds of crazy demands. So that's off the table now. Right. And then in the meantime, I went out to Thailand to film the movie. I hurt my leg. I had to have knee surgery. So I was out for a little bit. And he said, well, we're going to have to do an interim belt. I said, yeah, whatever. All good. And then in the meantime, fucking George St. Pierre kind of materialized. So it wasn't like I orchestrated this masterpiece. It was just. No, I wasn't there. I wasn't like puppeteering, fucking bullshitting everybody. No, I was in Thailand fucking with a bad knee. And it just all the pieces fell into place, but I'm happy about it. But you bring up a good point there because yesterday it emerged Conor McGregor is no longer in the top 15. He's not ranked, which is fucking crazy. I mean, who would have thought that a few years ago? I mean, he was literally on top of the sport. He still is in many ways in terms of star power and earning potential, but he's not even ranked inside the top 15 now, which is crazy.
What did you think of, what did you think of that last fight with Dustin? Because I think my opinion on that fight is different than a lot of people's, I think.
What's your opinion?
Well, I just think I think he looked really good at the beginning when he was throwing the kicks. And then if you actually go back and watch the sequence where Dustin was on top, Conor did an excellent job defending from the bottom. He really didn't get hit with a lot of really heavy shots. And then he stood up and his ankle folded in half. You know, it was like it almost seemed like a non-event to me. Like that fight was like a, you know, when I watched it the first time, I was like, oh, Dustin whipped his ass. And then he unfortunately got his leg broken. When I watched it again, I was like, oh man, like I can understand why Conor would think that was, you know, where he's like, well, we got to run it back. Cause that basically didn't even happen.
Yeah, I kind of disagree. Now, granted, I was working for ESPN and I was up high in the nosebleeds where they have a suite, but they got big screens and stuff. To me, it looked like Connor had a really bad run and got his ass kicked. You know what I mean? Yeah, I know he did a bit of damage from underneath. He threw some elbows and whatnot, but fucking Dustin was dropping some heavy elbows, some heavy bombs. But outside of that, regardless, he did snap his leg and he is out of the rankings now. And Harrington, can you just double check that? Because I did a YouTube video on it and everyone's like, he's still ranked. If you go to the UFC rankings, you will see he's ranked number 9. But outside of the UFC rankings, the general consensus, if you type in his name and you press news, it comes up many news stories. Conor McGregor, No longer in the rankings. And I understand it. I guess you could say he has, outside of Donald Cerrone, who also isn't ranked, he hasn't won a fight since 2016 against Eddie Alvarez.
They got him. They the UFC rankings, they've got him here at 9 right now.
Yeah, yeah. But that's the UFC rankings. Outside of that, all the other independent ranking bodies,
he's not ranked. Because it's the ones that they vote on, right? Like the people vote.
Correct. Yeah. The independent rankings, there is a team of journalists. Yeah. I don't know who they are or how they become so fucking qualified that they get the say. But there's a team of journalists that get together every month around a fucking in a secret location and say, this guy's ranked, that guy's not ranked. Harrington, what were you going to say?
So it's the newspaper, The Independent. They put out their pound for pound list for the year, and he did not make the top 10 for the first time in God knows how long.
He's not in there, but there's other websites as well. Trust me, because I did a video on it, and before I did that, I did my due diligence. I went to a few websites first. You know what I mean? I'm not going to do a clickbait story as we were just talking about. I made sure, and on a lot of websites that have UFC rankings, including MMAfighting.com, which is a big one. Yeah, he wasn't in the top 15. But listen, he just hasn't been active. And listen, it kind of paints an unfair narrative because he just fought Dustin Poirier, who's ranked number 1. And yeah, he got beat. And saying that he hasn't won a fight since God knows when isn't really fair. Do you know what I mean?
Because he lost fought to Khabib and Dustin.
There you go. Khabib and Dustin, the two, number one, the GOATs potentially, and then Dustin Poirier. It's not like he was in there against number 7, 8, or 9. He was the only very best. So you got to give him a little bit more credit than that, to be fair.
I totally agree. And I've been saying this on the channel, and I've been saying this to everybody forever. It's like, there's something about like the casual MMA fan where their brain can't compute that there's a difference between a loss to this person versus a loss to this person. It's like they don't, or even a win. It's like they don't understand that the level of their opponent, of the opponent, matters. Where like a guy goes in and he just blitzkrieg knocks out a guy who's like unranked. And they're like, this guy's fucking ready for the big time. And on the flip side, Connor loses to Khabib. And they're like, this guy's washed, man. He's washed.
Yeah, it's like Paddy the Baddy. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Paddy's going to no doubt have a great future. But he had one win so far against Luigi Vendramini. No disrespect to Luigi Vendramini, but he's not at the fucking top of any list. You know what I mean? He's a solid fighter and he had an entertaining fight and he lost. You know, but now it was like, oh, Paddy's going to be a champ. Who knows? Maybe he will one day. But as you just said, fucking on the flip side, he loses to Khabib and Dustin. And they're like, oh, he fucking sucks, which isn't the case at all.
No. Paddy got touched in that fight, too. He's got a strong chin, that's for sure.
He got touched well.
Yeah.
Going back to your pedophilia story at the top of the show. Harrington, go ahead.
We had another rankings update. And just to your point about how, you know, little this means, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, not ranked at strawweight right now.
She's not ranked at all.
No, I mean, she's been out for quite some time. You know what I mean?
That is insane.
Is she planning to come back?
So she just made a statement this week. She says that the only fight that makes sense for her is Zhang. She wants the rematch. She said the only other fight that made sense was Esparza, but she believes Esparza is 100% fighting Nama Yunus for the title. So the only thing that makes sense for her in her return is number 1.
Yeah, and then that, as you say, that goes into exactly what we were just talking about with Conor. Because when you think of the strawweight division, fair enough, Rose Namajunas, great champion now. You got Zhang. Obviously, Carlos Esparza's there, and there's Mackenzie Dern, and there's a couple of others, but Joanna Jędrzejczyk is still, without question, one of the best fighters in that weight class, and she could give a great fight to any one of them. Yeah, she lost to Rose twice. Yeah, she lost to Zhang, but what a fucking fight it was. I mean, and she was a dominant champion for so long. It's crazy that she's not in the top 15.
That makes no sense. That just means that whoever's voting is like, they went and they looked, they're all right, well, let's see what these people did this year. Because it's like, I mean, Joanna's last two fights at 115 were both bang out super close decisions against Rose and Wei Li. And like that Wei Li fight is the, I mean, in my opinion, it's the best female fight of all time without any really close competition. When I was watching that fight, I was in Tahoe with a bunch of, like, with my whole family. And my daughter, my 9-year-old, is like, she's a jiu-jitsu champion. And this is before, that. Yeah. And this is before that. And now watching that fight, I said to my dad and my brother, I was like, if one of these girls was my daughter, I'd be bawling, crying. I'd be so fucking proud of them. And they looked at me like I was nuts. Yeah, like, you know, because Joanna had the big thing on her head. And
she definitely looks like a Klingon. Yes.
Yeah. And they couldn't understand that at all. Like, they're like, you'd be proud of your daughters if they did that. It's just, some people don't understand. Like, they don't understand.
You see, a lot of people, as popular as this sport is now, it's still got a long way to go in certain places. So I'm talking about England. So I did an interview because I got this tour that I'm doing. I'm doing round two later this year. So I did some interviews and I spoke to BBC Five Live, which is it's the BBC. And I spoke to them the other day and the guy was so disinterested. He wasn't interested at all. He was just, obviously, he's been told, he's doing his job. You've got to interview this guy. He used to be a UFC fighter. And he was so aloof and he was so not fucking interested at all. And he was saying the same kind of shit. He's like, so what about your children? Would you want your children to do this? It's a very vicious sport and stuff like that. And I'm like, listen, dude, you don't know. In America, right, it's a big fucking deal. It's a very popular sport. It's on a Saturday afternoon. It's alongside all the big sports, you know. But this guy couldn't have given a fuck. And he was like, as you say, you said you'd be proud of your daughter, and your friends are like, what the hell? You know, it's still got a long way to go, even in the States to a certain degree, but around the world, it still doesn't quite get the respect that I feel it should.
And I just don't think that most people understand what they're looking at. Like, the reason why I love the sport so much, you know, because I did kickboxing, I do some jiu-jitsu and stuff, but I just don't think that people even understand what they're looking at. Like, you're literally looking at two athletes that have dedicated their entire life to fine-tuning their skills, to preparing every day for years and years and years. And then you're going to put them in the cage, and basically the outcome of the fight between them and another person who's done the same thing is going to have such astronomical impact on their life every fucking time that they fight. And it's like, I just don't think people can even understand what they're actually watching.
Yeah, no. Or appreciate it, because this guy, I was talking to him and I was trying to educate him a little bit and he clearly wasn't listening, because then he just turns around and goes, Novak Djokovic, he hasn't taken the vaccine and he's going to get turned. No, he was getting special treatment. Now he's turned since then. I don't know if you followed this story.
That, the tennis guy?
The tennis player, yeah. He went down for the Australian Open in Australia, obviously. And then when he got there, he's been turned away because he hasn't got a vaccine. He said initially that he had a medical exemption. And, like, you know, I'm on here trying to promote my tour, appeal to UFC fans. And he just goes, and I gave a big, long speech about it and just went, yeah, Novak Djokovic has just been turned away in Australia. What do you think about that? I was like, yeah, I'm just wasting my fucking time here.
Yeah. But you're so, like, I think if I weigh in on this subject, that I'm going to make people, someone is not going to buy a ticket to my fucking show. No matter
100%. I'm like, why are you making me talk about the fucking vaccine? Okay. Yeah. Because it is a hot button topic. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, I'm staying away from that one all fucking day long. Anyway, Harrington, what else have we got? But anything, any big news? What's this about Charles Oliveira saying that he's 50% blind?
Well, let me ask you about the tour real quick. So is that is it comedy stuff? Like, is that the...
Yeah, it's not me being a stand-up comedian, but I guess it kind of is to a certain degree. But I did this show in Toronto. We had a lot of fun. And then this guy just made me an offer for all these events in England. And I said, fuck it, let's do it. And then... Yeah, it's me on stage for 90 minutes by myself.
It's like the Mike Tyson show ish.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like that. And I was kind of terrified, but it actually was such a great experience. And the crowd was amazing. And then they booked us for another one later this year. And then we're going down to Australia. So if anyone wants a ticket, myticket.co.uk. We're going to Sweden, Copenhagen, Amsterdam, Oslo, Norway. So yeah, and then Australia and New Zealand as well. But yeah, no, it was.
Is there other people who come out, or is it just
no, you just me, Yeah, yeah. See, the thing is, I'm gonna have to tweak it a little bit because in the UK, obviously, I had a great following, and obviously these people. Obviously, they've done the homework, the markets I'm going to, but they don't want to hear me just talking about how great it was to be the first British champion and stuff. So I'm going to have to tweak it a little bit. Before it was my tales from the Octagon. Now it's just going to be other people's tales from the Octagon. So yeah, it's a bit of fun. It's a bit of fun. We have a laugh and talk some shit and tell some stupid jokes and whatnot. So yeah, that was that. Tales from the Octagon.
That's awesome.
I never thought I'd be doing anything like that. But yeah, basically it's like the Tyson one-man show, that type of thing. A lot of fighters tend to do that type of stuff. Anyway, Harrington, are you around? Are you alive?
Yes, sir.
He's not. Yes.
So, yeah, Charles Oliveira, I don't know if you ever noticed this. I processed it the other day. He always has very thick glasses on. Anywhere that he always goes, anytime he's in interviews, it's like the old school 1950s Coke bottle glasses. Turns out, he says when he takes them off, he's 50% blind, right? Like, that's how bad his vision is. But he says it's never once affected him in a fight.
Yeah, no. Because, and I used to train with the guy, was the same way, Choco, this guy I used to train with years ago. He had the same way, glasses. And you're not supposed to wear contact lenses when you fight, but how they know, because I used to wear contact lenses all the fucking time, because my vision, of course, you know, is massively impaired these days. But, yes, Brian?
Top comment on the video is, you could also say Bisping had 50% of his eyesight.
Oh, yeah. I kind of did. But what we were saying, no, so you've got to be able to see 2200 vision, right? So I'm assuming he can see 2200, which, by the way, is still clinically blind. Your class is clinically blind if all you can see is 2200. But I'm assuming, and I don't know this because I haven't spoken to Charles and I don't speak Portuguese and I don't have a relationship with him whatsoever, but there's different types of vision. Isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Is that when you take the glasses off, he can probably still see his fucking opponent because he has no problem fighting.
Yeah, and there are certain kind of conditions that you can get fixed, and there are some that you can't. Like I instead of LASIK, I got PRK, because if you're like, just they basically were like, well, if you're ever gonna like be sparring or fighting, you don't want to do LASIK because they cut the thing. You have to do this different procedure. But the thing that I had, you can fix it, but like some people you can't, like their eyes are fucked in a way that like you can't get surgery. There's no way to fix it.
Yeah. No, I have astigmatism in my one good eye, so they can't fix that. So, but that's interesting for Charles though, because you do see him, he goes out there, he fights, but he does walk out with his glasses on. And then as soon afterwards, he's got the glasses on again. In fact, somebody stole them. I don't know if you saw that. You see that shit as he's walking out the arena, one of the fans, because you know, They're an aggressive bunch, but it's awesome. You're walking out and they're all grabbing you and they want to get a selfie and stuff. Do you know what I mean? And you're playing the game and it's nice. You're reveling in your moment. You know, you've just had a great win. Charles just became the undisputed champion, or defended the belt, pardon me. You know, it's a great moment. So you want to have that interaction. And then some little motherfucker grabs his glasses and steals them. Asshole.
Fucking balls on that guy. It's stuff like that, I would never do that. Like there's no amount of booze. There's no nothing like that. That is a thing that I would never do ever, no matter what.
It is a great moment because it feels good. And even still now, you know, if I go to a UFC event, and I'm not bigging myself up, you know, you get a bit of attention and people want pictures. But a lot of the time, those pictures, people are really fucking drunk. Do you know what I mean? So you go up and you're like, yeah, cool, man, we'll do a picture. And they're like, hey! And they're pouring fucking beer on you. And it goes from being a positive interaction to wanting to almost kill them. It's like, you know, you got your new shirt on that you just bought. You feel you look nice. And, you know, you got a long night ahead of you. And then some drunk asshole spills a beer all over. And you're like, motherfucker, what the fuck, come on, please.
And stand still if you want to hang out.
Yes, please.
Just real quick before moving on from Charles Oliveira, bit of housekeeping. Oliveira and Dustin Poirier both chimed in on the $20,000 donation. Poirier said that, yeah, the holidays did jam him up a little bit, but he has been in contact. Oliveira confirmed that the donation is going through, so both good guys there.
What did I tell you? There's no way Dustin Poirier is going to do that. Dustin's a good fucking guy, man. I like that.
That is a guy that any person who understands humanity is rooting for.
Oh, of course. He's one of the good guys. He really is. And it's not an act. It's not a pretense that he puts out there. He's just a good, solid dude that likes to fight and he's really fucking good at it.
He's been with his lady forever. I mean, I've been together my life for 15 years. I know your story too. He's been with his girl since he was like 17 years old or something like that.
Yeah. I remember years ago, I was in Manchester, and this was, what year was this? It was Manchester, England. It was like 2012 maybe. And he just signed with the UFC, I think. And he was with his girlfriend then. And we were all sat at a dinner table together. The UFC take you out to dinner if you're flying in for PR duties. I was living here, but there was a fight on. So I went out there and I had no idea who he was, but he just signed. I'm like, hey buddy, how you doing? And as you say, he was there with his lady, even back then. All right. Anything else we need to get to before we get to some questions, Brian or Harrington? Any burning topics, anything big that we missed?
Yeah, I just put one thing in the notes there. I don't know if you want to talk about it. Sean Strickland, the gift that keeps on giving, put out a pretty cool Instagram video today.
Should we watch it?
Have either of you guys seen this yet?
Yeah, I have seen it. I saw this. Let me just say this real quick. I saw this because I was led in bed this morning. And do you remember Orlando Sanchez, the jiu-jitsu guy that had the fucking beef with Sean Strickland because, he tweaked his arm. And then it all kicked off. And then Sean, like, spinning backfisted him and stuff. Well, Orlando, I know Orlando. So I follow him, of course. And he tagged this video saying, and this is the fucking guy that everybody talks shit about me for armbarring him or whatever. And then here he is knocking somebody out. So, yes, I have seen this. Have you seen this, Jesse?
I have not. But I will say if I was Sean Strickland's manager, I would be so proud of him. He's fucking amazing at getting, getting publicity, dude.
Let me tell you, listen, Sean's, he's the real deal. He is who he is. Sometimes you want to kill him, but I got to say, I'm enjoying him lately. It's a refreshing take. Do you know what I mean? But still, he knocks this guy out pretty fucking good. Roll tape, please.
Oh, man, this guy's happy.
Hey, listen.
Is that guy a walk-in that challenged him or something? Or that's really one of his sparring partners that he just fucking lit up like that?
I would like to think it's one of his sparring partners. I would like to think so. I doubt he would do that to someone that just walked in and, like, you know, first day on the mat.
I meant like an internet troll who was like, oh, fuck you, Strick. Because then I'm like, knock that guy out. You know, like.
I doubt that. I mean, the general consensus is these days that Sean Strickland spars incredibly hard. I was talking about this because when I used to spar with him, he wasn't like that. But he's on the best form of his career right now. I think he's on like a 4-fight win streak and he's looking like an absolute monster in there. So something has snapped because when I used to spar him, he wasn't like that, but now he's fucking out. And everybody says it, whether he's sparring whoever that guy is there, these Russians that he spars with, everybody says the same thing. And apparently, I think it's Eric Nixik, one of the coaches from Extreme Couture, says he's always going after Francis Ngannou because he said, I want to feel like I'm close to death the whole time, which you would feel. And when you're sparring Francis Ngannou, even with a 16-ounce glove on, holy shit, you know what I mean? So fair play to him.
He's on a 5-fight win streak.
5. Okay, God bless him. Yeah. Man. No, it's, you don't really want to knock people out in sparring, but it does happen. It happens on occasion. It is what it is. God bless him.
Early predictions, Sean Strickland, the betting line just came out. Sean Strickland -188, Jack Hermanson +155 for the card that they're headlining in February.
Hold on. Say that one more time. So Strickland is?
Almost a 2-1 favorite.
Really? On Jack Hermanson?
Yep. +155 for Hermanson.
You know what? Because Sean has a lot of crazy pressure on the ground. He's got a really underrated ground game. If people don't know, that's one of his best attributes. He's got really, really good fucking jiu-jitsu. Like, really good. He's got some tricky sweeps. He's tricky on the ground. That's a good fight for him. A tough one for Hermanson. But you never know. You never know.
I love him on the feet against Hermanson. He just doesn't let guys breathe. Like, there's no, like, that's reset. It. There's no, you know, take a couple minutes or couple seconds, he just is on him the entire
time.
It's
legit nonstop pressure. All right. Do we have any questions suitable for Jesse and I?
Well, I have one very British question here from a mini pepper.
A mini pepper. All right.
Yeah, what's happening, BYM? And listeners, Mini here from Lincoln, England. Mike, you probably know it for being close to Skegness. Right. Quick questions. Been listening to BYM and got me thinking a bit. You're obviously an English man now living in the US. Do you still watch English television? And if so, what? You know, my go-to is Only Fools and Horses All Day. Absolutely cushy. So, yeah, let us know. Keep up the good work. Peace.
Skegness in the house. You ever been to Skegness, Jesse?
I have not.
Yeah, yeah. No, you don't really want to go. You don't really want to go. Nothing wrong with it. Lincoln as well, not a bad place. Only Fools and Horses. Are you aware of this show called Only Fools and Horses?
I was going to say, I understood every word of that except the TV show that he cited.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Only Fools and Horses is like a legendary classic comedy. Went on, you know, for many, many years. It's great. Big fan. Thank you for the question, you mini pepper. I appreciate that. Do I watch any British TV shows? I do. I still watch. Well, I put Sky News on in the morning. That's when in my rotation. So that's British. I put GMTV, Good Morning Britain. I watch that. What else do I watch? I watch A Place in the Country on Amazon Prime. There's the BritBox channel on Amazon Prime. So I go to that and they have a lot of British shows on there. You watch any British shows, Jesse?
I do not watch it. Well, there's probably some like some murder mystery show that I watch from. I know that I have watched British shows. I can't think of their names right now, but like I like series. A notable part of this segment of the show, though, the way that I started doing Jesse on Fire was Chael put me on fan questions a couple of years ago. And the question that I asked him was, if you could have any dream fight under any two fighters under any set of rules, what would you choose? And mine would be Francis Ngannou against Deontay Wilder in a boxing match with MMA gloves. It's a fact. Like I made a video about it. Like
this is it's all down to you, Jesse. You made this fire. You put it out there. It's nothing to do with Francis Ngannou.
I'm living in a simulation. It's my theory. It's like there's no other explanation for it.
If he gets paid on a big fight with Tyson Fury, he owes you 10%. that it is. No, come on, Jesse. You made this happen.
I would still pay $5,000 just to watch the pay-per-view.
What do you watch? Do you have any good shows that you're watching right now? Because every night I go to bed with my wife and it's always the same shit. We're watching Sopranos again, just simply because it's one of the best shows ever fucking made. It's but amazing. Also because I can't find anything else. And a lot of these new shows are fucking garbage. They're shit. And I just can't deal with it. What are you watching?
So the new show that we're watching that's awesome is Yellow Jackets on Showtime.
Right.
It's so fucking good. It's about like this. It's about like this championship high school girls soccer team. This sounds fucking weird to start.
I was gonna say it doesn't sound very good. It sounds like the star of the show.
Yeah, they. So they're flying to this. They're flying to their tournament, and their plane crashes in the middle of nowhere, and they survive, and they get stuck out there for 19 months. So it's like Lord of the Flies, but then the show happens 25 years later. Like, so it's going back and forth between all this fucked up shit that happened in the forest, and then their future lives. It's so good. Like it's one of those shows where I wish I would have waited till it was all the way over so I could have binged it because it's infuriating.
It's called Yellow Bus.
Yellow Jackets.
Yellow. I thought you were gonna say Yellowstone because everyone's just going on about Yellowstone like it's the greatest show ever. I couldn't get past the first episode.
You have to force yourself through it. What about Taboo? Speaking of UK shows, have you ever watched Taboo?
I started watching it because it's what's his face, isn't it? Dan Hardy. Fucking hell. Taboo. I started watching it. I think I might have watched the first season. This was a while.
There's only one season.
Yellowstone. I wasn't feeling it, but I'll go back to it. I'll give it a watch. Anyway, all right. We've been going for a while there, Brian.
Oh, we have one more question if you want to get to that. And is Peaky Blinders British? I think it's made by an American company.
It's a great show.
Peaky Blinders is British. Come on, don't be trying to fucking steal credit. Peaky Blinders is great, though. Steal credit.
That show's awesome.
Well, it was awesome. And I'm still a big fan of it, but it just started getting a little silly, if you ask me. Started off great the first few seasons. Then they're taking on the mafia. Then it's
the
word. It's just, it's like the Russians, the mafia. It's like, come on. How about you just having a bit of beef with the guys in your own neck of the woods? Do you know what I mean? Why is it going to be international all of a sudden? Anyway, Brian, what's the last question? What do we have, bud?
So I got a question here from a Mr. Matt Eckenrode.
Look at this guy.
Hey, guys. Happy New Year. I was wondering, Mike, have you ever played any instruments? If so, what? And if not, what instrument would you picture yourself playing? I personally picture you as a shredding lead guitarist. Ooh. My man, Brian, I see you as a drummer or a bass player, you know, laying down the foundation for people being that support network, which you are for the show. Thank you. Harrington, on the other hand, I see you as a flute player, man. What can I say? Anyway, boys, take care. I love the show. Also, Harrington, put on a real shirt instead of the tank
top. Yes!
We ain't trying to look at your hairy chest.
Thank you. Thank you. Jesse, you don't understand. The last show, and Harrington, I'm sorry, I'm going to shame you.
Shame.
You were almost naked on the last show, and a lot of people in the comments were like, tell that motherfucker he can't dress like that. And because when I saw him, I'm like, I can't tell people how to dress. You know what I mean? I can't do that. But seeing as everybody, and we're even getting questions about it, Harrington, I'm going to throw you under a bus. You're banned from wearing very skimpy little vests that leave very little to the imagination. musical instruments, Jesse, you play any?
No,
me neither. I always want to play the piano. You know what I mean?
My daughter plays piano a little bit.
Yeah. I keep saying I'm going to learn an instrument, but when I was at school, you could pick an instrument to play to learn, and you could have picked everything. But there was one girl I kind of liked her, she was doing cello, so I picked cello. Can't play the cello. No, I'm not a musical instrument type.
Do you still do you still do jits now? Even like just to,
I haven't done it for a while, but this year I'm going to get back into it. I just don't have time these days, and there's not somewhere pretty close to my house. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But no, I've been speaking to someone. I'm going to start doing it pretty regularly. I'm going to try and get back into it twice a week. I want to get my black belt. I've got a brown belt. I want to get my black belt. I spent all that time in the practice room. Why the fuck not?
Do tournaments maybe? Would you do jiu-jitsu tournaments?
Yeah, just my knees are really bad though. I've got two fake knees. So it's just going on my knees on the ground because they're still totally numb. It doesn't hurt, but it's just the weirdest sensation.
When did you get that done? After you were fighting?
Oh, yeah. One done in 2019, one in 2020.
Dude, I've been in the operating room when I saw someone do that surgery. I actually saw three in a day. It's a long story. I was interviewing for a job a long time ago, but like that is bananas. They just zip. They just saw the knee off, and then carpenter it together. I asked the guy in there. I was like, how long until he's gonna be able to walk on that? Like I thought he was gonna say 2 fucking years. Like I just watched him saw his knee off, you know, and then. If he would have said 2 years, I'd have been like,
they slice you open, they pull it apart, they literally remove your knee, they shave down the femur,
then they
shave down the tibia and the fibula at the top as well, and then they insert a new fucking robotic knee, staple you back up, and off you pop. There you go. You know,
he's like, he'll be able to walk on it tomorrow. I was like, get the fuck out of here.
That's what I said to my fucking doctor at the time. I said, how soon before I can walk again? He said, you'll be on the Peloton bike later today. And like, I'm like, you're full of shit. And he was full of shit.
Pardon me. Isn't that amazing that like that they could put you to sleep and they could saw off your knee?
And you have no idea.
And you have no idea. Like you just sit there and then you wake up, you're all, oh, cool, I'm gonna go get on the bike. Like,
yeah. Yeah, no. It is wild. It is wild. But I'm telling you, my legs swelled up to at least twice the size. The pain was ridiculous. One of the most miserable experiences. But I will say this. One of the best things I ever did, because Matt Serra, obviously, you know, who Matt Serra is. He's always going on at me. I did his podcast recently. He's like, Mike, the knee replacement, do you recommend it? I said, listen, it's a shitty procedure to go through, but it is one of the best things that I ever did because he's in pain all the time as well. I now have a life of no pain in my knees, whereas in the past it was awful, you know. Still, anyway, there we go.
Yeah, people don't understand I've never dealt with it, but I know a lot of people that have dealt with it. It's like, they're like, dude, I'm in pain fucking all the time. 100% of the time I'm in pain.
24/7 all the time and just walking and all that type of stuff. All right. Well, listen, we'll let you go, Jesse. Thank you very much. We'll have to do this again soon. I appreciate you. Before we let you go out of here, is there anything you want to get off your chest? Anything you want to shout out? Anything at all?
Oh, I will probably regret not doing anything, but I think I just wanted to say thank you guys very much for having me on. Are you going to be at UFC 270?
I'll be there. I'm working it for ESPN. You're going to be there?
I'll be there. I'll be in section 108, real close.
All right, well, shoot me a message. I'll come say hi, and we'll maybe grab a beer, even though I don't drink anymore. So, what was I going to say? Do yourself a favor, guys. Go to Jesse's YouTube page, Jesse on Fire. Just Jesse on Fire, right?
Yep.
Jesse on Fire, give him a follow, give him a subscribe, all that good stuff. You won't regret it. Jesse, thank you very much. Truly appreciate you coming on and joining us. Hope you all enjoyed that. Thank you for watching the show. And Until Monday, take care.